Good morning. Today's daf in Sukkah, Chav Tes. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. The daf will be learned. L'zecher Nishmas Lois Lupin Zaltzman. We are on Chav Ches Amud Beis. We did the Mishnah yesterday. Mishnah gave us a basic understanding and a basic thought process in terms of the Sukkah on Sukkah. Sukkah needs to be our house. The Sukkah cannot be, the house cannot be our house in Sukkah, but rather the Sukkah is our house. And so let's just go back to the Mishnah. We're going to start again from the Mishnah. We're going to go straight from there through the Gemara. So during the 7 days of Sukkah, a person is supposed to make a Sukkah that which is permanent, and his house is supposed to be temporary. So now it starts raining in the Sukkah, meaning unlike the house, which if it rains, okay, that's the whole purpose of a house, to protect you from the elements. But now in the Sukkah it starts raining. It's difficult to live in a Sukkah while it's raining, as we discussed yesterday. There's a patur, there's an exemption that when you're mitzar, that when you're uncomfortable, so you're no longer obligated to sit in the Sukkah. So basically what the Mishnah is going to do is it's going to try to give us a guideline, a halacha, basically, in terms of when exactly would it be okay to leave the Sukkah. So mayim asay mut alifnos mishat tisrecha mikpah. So when the food is starting to get sour, when the food's starting to get bad, because the rain is coming down and the rain is dripping through the schach and the rain is now landing in your food, and at that point in time you're entitled to leave. You have an opportunity to leave. Mashal mashal amad avadama. Now it rains on Sukkos, and the Chachamim give a mashal. They give an analogy, a parable in terms of what it's like. So dama le'evet shabal le'mzog kos le'rabo v'shafach lo kiton al panav. So it's like a servant who is coming to dilute the wine for his master, and shafach lo kiton al panav, and he pours the water right in his face. Now, who's pouring the water in whose face? So the Gemara is going to ask that question later on. But as Rashi points out later on, I'll show you the Rashi later on. Either way, in other words, the point is obvious. Meaning, if it rains on Sukkot, it can say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing that his displeasure with us for whatever reason, which we'll talk about a little bit later on this morning. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu was unhappy, and so therefore it rains on Sukkot. We no longer can fulfill the mitzvah of Sukkot, and it's a simon. It's not a good sign. We'll talk about that later. Tanur Rabbanan, we start with the Gemara. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. Kol Shivas Yamim Adamos Sukkah Sukkeva Veso Arai. So all 7 days of Sukkah, a person is supposed to make a Sukkah keva. Your Sukkah becomes your home. Your house, that's your other home, but not in Sukkahs. If you have nice dishes, so you bring them out to the Sukkah. If you have nice sheets, you bring them out to the Sukkah. By the way, it always says Malan, right? By this point in time in the Masechta, we should all be aware of the fact that their Sukkah was always on the roof. I came out all the time. I mean, every time we talked about going to the Sukkah, we talked about going up to the Sukkah. Okay, you talk about an aliyah. It's, you know, it's a mitzvah, spiritually uplifting. But practically speaking, though, at this point in time, I think we all realize that the Sukkahs were on the roof. Ocha v'shosa mitaya b'sukkah. You eat, you drink, and you spatzir in the Sukkah. All right, dear. Relax in the Sukkah. Manan Emili, the Gemara says, where does this come from? How do I know? The Tanur Rabbanan. The Gemara quotes a braisa, teshvu kein taduru. The pasuk says teshvu. Besukah's teshu shivas yamim. So the yeshiva besukah, the fact that we live in the sukkah, kein taduru, meaning for 7 days the sukkah becomes our home. And it's from this point that the Chachamim made the statement. We saw it in the Mishnah. We saw it again in the Braisa. We're now repeating ourselves that for the 7 days the sukkah becomes our house. Okay, so far so good. We've just basically repeated the points of eat, drink, bring your good dishes, and relax in the sukkah. Now in this braisa we have one other point which we didn't make previously, and that is you learn in the sukkah. Make sure to learn in the sukkah, meaning you have your options of where you should be learning. Don't go into your house to learn. Go into the sukkah to learn. Learn in the sukkah. Now, mishanein, if we could take a look together at that first Rashi in the Gemara, mishanein b'sukkah, sover limuda u'mischacha aborio. So Rashi says the word shinun over here doesn't mean just simply to learn, but the word shinun means to understand, analysis. Lama dahainu shmaita da marayev as far as shaltame mishnah ubraisa. Meaning it's not just a shinun, it's not just simply to learn the mishnayos, because that's step one, but after step one, after learning the mishnayos, the next step is to understand and to give svara. Matam zechayev, zepato, zeasav, zemutar. So in other words, Shinun is not just simply getting familiar with the text, but Shinun is comprehension, understanding, and analysis. You'll see why that Rashi is important in just a moment. We go through the Gemara, we go back to the Gemara. Omishanim b'sukkah. Good. So we have a brisa. Bring your good dishes up to the sukkah. Eat and drink in the sukkah. Relax in the sukkah and learn in the sukkah. Ini the Gemara says, now is this true? V'amar Rava mikro misna b'matalasa v'tanui b'amitalasa. So Rava says, I don't understand. I'm sorry. The Gemara says, I don't understand, because Rava makes a declarative statement that you should be reading Chumash and you should be learning your Mishnayos in the sukkah. Reading Chumash, learning Mishnayos, meaning just basically get familiar with the text. Right? Read the Chumash. Learn the Mishnayos, meaning don't learn, understand. Just, in other words, say the Mishnah, get familiar with it, and then Tanui Bar Mitalasa. And then, when it comes to comprehension, analysis, understanding, so move outside of the sukkah.
Why?
So, right, that's the right question. So move outside the sukkah. So Lo Kasha Habemigros Habeinui. Beiune. Okay. So the Gemara says, no, we'll make the following distinction. When we're talking about that which you're supposed to be doing inside the sukkah, so that's migros. Migros, like from the word girsa, meaning that's when you just simply go over things. You don't really need concentration, attention, focus, meaning you just want to get familiar with the text. So that you do inside the sukkah. But when it comes to iyun, so iyun you do outside the sukkah. Why would I be doing iyun outside the sukkah? So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi explains. Rashi says, Rashi, I'm looking at the Rashi Bar Mitzalah, so it's like five lines from the bottom of the Amud. And Rashi, Im Yirtzeh. Now Rashi says, first of all, you have to understand, we're not talking that you have to leave your sukkah in order to come to analysis and understanding. That's not what the Gemara is saying, says Rashi. It just simply means that you have permission to go ahead and to leave your sukkah once you're doing analysis. Why should that be? Demitzarehu. So Rashi gives an explanation, because when you're concentrating, when you're trying to focus, so you're mitzar, meaning it's uncomfortable. Meaning you need, right, you're working your head, you're working your brain. Umitzar patam in a sukkah, and therefore you're exempt from the sukkah. V'ha'avir yafelo, and air is great. Laharchiv dato, in order to expand your mind. Meaning sometimes when you're enclosed and you just need a little bit of air. So Rashi says, so when you're doing serious analysis, so then you're entitled to simply step outside the sukkah, get some fresh air, and to think outside. And then Rashi sets us up for the question and answer of the Gemara, because at this point in time we think that Shinun and Tanui means the same thing, and that's why the Gemara was bothered. And then the Gemara gives the distinction between Migras and Iyune. Migras, if you take a look now, let's just go with the next couple of Rashis. Hala Migras Klamar. Trey Gavni Shinun Havel. There are two different types of Shinun. Number one, Lemigras Gemara Habrulo Kvar Vahinu Shemaita Tzarech Sukkah. If you're going over that which you already know. So in other words, it is analysis, but it's analysis that you know already. So that you can remain the Sukkah. But if it's Iyun, but if it's something where you're really straining your head and you're trying to figure something out and you're really coming up with new Svara, so there you can walk outside the Sukkah and you can enjoy the fresh air and you're a Mitzar. Okay, good. And the Gemara then follows all this up with the story. We're on the top of Chavtes Amar Aleph. Ki ha de Rava bar Chama ki abakayme mekame de Rav Chista. Mehate be Gemara baha de adade. So the Gemara explains, or not explains, but gives the story of Rava together with Rav Chista. So what they would do, merahit be Gemara. Literally, they would just run through Gemara together. Meaning, right, the way Rashi describes it, they heard shir, they just said over the shir again. Right? They, in other words, this is nothing new. This is just simply a review. And then after that, meaning after they become familiar with the Gemara, the Shir, what the Rav said, and afterwards they want to give analysis, so then they could give analysis. But in other words, first they go over it, and then afterwards you give analysis. Okay, good. Amar Rava. We are three lines from the top of the Amud. We're on Chavtes Amud Aleph. Mani Mishtai Bar Mitalasa, Mani Michle Bar Mitalasa. Cups can stay in the sukkah, but dishes are to be taken outside the sukkah. Rashi explains that we're talking about after the meal. After the meal, so you want to leave your cups in the sukkah, that's fine. The cups aren't disgusting. But to leave the dishes after the meal in the sukkah, so that's gross. As the way Rashi describes its meals, it's just simply disgusting. Leftover food on the dishes. So in other words, you want to make the sukkah a pleasant environment. So therefore, keep your sukkah clean and neat, and that's why the dishes are to be taken outside the sukkah after the meal is over. So, chatzva v'shachel bar mitalasa, chatzva v'shachel, earthenware jugs, wooden pails, So that's to be taken outside the sukkah. And shraga b'metalasa. But the candle, right, the light, that could be kept inside of the sukkah. V'amrile b'metalasa. Now, some have a version that it should be taken outside of the sukkah, below pligin. Okay, so in other words, when it comes to the candle, so there's a machlokus in the Gemara between the two memras. One memra is that the candle should be kept in the sukkah, and the other one is that it should be taken out in the sukkah. And the Gemara says, not a problem, ha b'sukkah gedola, ha b'sukkah katana. One's talking about a sukkah gedola, and the other one's talking about a sukkah katana. Now, oddly enough, just for a moment to look at Rashi, oddly enough, Rashi doesn't really give an explanation why that should be. Meaning, a candle cannot be brought into a small sukkah, but a candle can be brought into a large sukkah. I say candle, I just simply mean, you know, a flame. Okay, and just to make Rashi just a little more perplexing, Rashi by sukkah katana, so he writes, Shoshir mitzumsam zayin tfachim asar lahanicham betocha. So Rashi says, when we're talking about a small sukkah, we're talking about the minimalist sukkah. We're talking about the sukkah of 7x7. Sounds like from Rashi that any time that your sukkah is over 7x7, so then there's no problem with bringing a flame into the sukkah. So, not clear for Rashi's standpoint, why exactly would it be a problem? Right. So, right, okay. So for Rashi...
Don't you think the area of the Fishayin on the Usim refers also to the wax and everything dripping and so on? It's smelly and messy.
Yeah, but Rashi, does Rashi say meals when it comes to the...
No, but he said it already, so to speak.
Okay, could be, it could be, you're right, but it's just strange, and Rashi doesn't explain the chiluk of the Gemara. If you take a look at the Ran, so the Ran says, and this is what I assume, but I saw in the Ran, so even better, the Ran says, no, the small sukkah, large sukkah, we don't have to give exact dimensions, but the point is very simple, that in a small sukkah, you have a burning candle, and so it's a fire hazard. Right, so, but if it's a large sukkah and you have a burning flame inside the sukkah, so it's not a fire hazard. So that's just a simple distinction between a small sukkah versus a large sukkah. Okay, good. Back to the Gemara. Yardug shamim tana, mishitizrach ha mikpa shel grisa. Okay, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Now, we already saw in our Mishnah, once it starts raining and the drops come into your food, so then you're entitled to leave your sukkah. That's what our Mishnah said. What the Bryce over here does is add two words. Yeah, yes, sir.
Yeah, I know down here it doesn't snow, but up north,
yeah,
it can snow sometimes, yeah, on the sukkah. One time we had like 4 inches. Can you sit in the sukkah?
I hope you're not. I mean, I appreciate the question, but that's a good opportunity to ask your Rav. Good. So the Bryce does over here is that the Bryce adds two words that we don't have in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that once the mishitizrach hamikbah, mikbah usually is a term that's used for some sort of porridge, some cereal, okay, whatever, some stew. So fine, that's what we saw in our Mishnah. So what do we add in the Braisa that's quoted in the Gemara? Mishitizrach hamikbah shel grisim. We're talking about not just a stew, but a stew made up of beans. And so what? So Rashi says this is a kula. This is actually a leniency. Because Rashi says that the beans, so they become spoiled that much quicker and that much easier. So therefore, according to Rashi, the way Rashi understands what the Bryce says adding to the discussion, is that now basically the threshold has been lowered. Where the threshold now is no longer you need all your food to spoil, but even the most delicate and sensitive foods, once it starts dripping in, so at that point in time now you're starting, you're entitled to leave the sukkah. Abava have a kayasev kame de Rav Yosef b'metalasa. Now shavzika b'kamaisa tzivusa. So the Gemara tells a story where Abai was sitting together with Rav Yosef in a sukkah, and the wind blew, and small twigs started blowing in. So it wasn't even rain, wasn't even precipitation. It was just small twigs that were coming down. Amle Rav Yosef panele mani me'acha. So Rav Yosef says, okay, enough. Now, this is Rav Yosef, before he lost his sight, after he lost his sight. Either way, he was left uncomfortable in the sukkah. So he told his attendants, okay, excuse me, gentlemen, it's time to go. Pack it up, we're going inside the house. So Abaye, the student of Rav Yosef, says to his rabbi, I don't understand, right? It doesn't sound like we're entitled to leave the sukkah yet. There's no rain, no precipitation, no dripping into the sukkah. It's just a little bit of wind. So Amar Leili, Didi came and Danina Daite, Kimisha Tisrecha Mikba Damili. So Rav Yosef says, I am fastidious. I'm sensitive. I'm delicate. This already bothers me. And therefore, I am entitled to leave the sukkah. In other words, basically what Rav Yosef is saying is that there is not an objective threshold to mitzta'er. Mitzta'er basically is a subjective nature. I mean, the Mishnah gives us some means of trying to quantify what mitzta'er is. It starts raining and it rains into your food and now the food is getting spoiled. And okay, that's an attempt of a quantification of what the shear of mitzta'er is. And the Brice is even more specific in terms of identifying what food it is. But Rav Yosef says, but look, I'm a very delicate person. And when it starts blowing, when wind starts blowing and the twigs are falling down onto the table, I'm done. I can't. I have a low tolerance. I need to leave. So basically, there seems to be, again, I'm not the rav in this discussion, but there seems to be a subjective nature to mitzta'er, and it's not necessarily objective in nature.
But this whole concept of like being under distress is like, yeah, that way it was a repetition. I had to wash his face because he couldn't, like on a day that he wasn't
mm-hmm, fasting. Mm-hmm. Right, correct.
They're like very subjective.
Correct. And in certain areas in halacha, so there's an allowance for subjectivity. And this and mitzvah is a perfect example because basically mitzvah means I'm uncomfortable. Tanu Rabbana haya ocha besukah v'yardu g'shamim v'yered ein matrich noso la'alos ad sheik marsu udasa. Okay, the rain kicked you out of the sukkah. Okay, it happens here in South Florida. It happens often. So the rain kicks you out of the sukkah. Now you're in your house. So now what? Now it stops raining, right? In Florida again, that happens frequently. It rains and it stops. And so now you're looking at the sukkah. And now you moved everything inside the house. So now after it stops raining, and obviously after it stops dripping, so am I now entitled to go back out to the sukkah? Or not entitled, let's say better. Am I required? That's a better way to say it. Am I required to now go back out to the sukkah? Or can we finish our meal now in peace inside the house anyway? We're inside anyway. So Tanu Rabbanan Hayocha B'sukkah V'yardu G'shamim V'yered. So now sukkahs, rain, we got exiled from our sukkah. We're now in our house. So the Braisa says you can finish your meal inside your house. You don't have to go back outside to the sukkah, and you can conclude your meal inside the house. The Gemara gives, let's use another example. Let's say you are in the sukkah, and you're sleeping in the sukkah, and then in the middle of the night, it starts raining. Okay, so you get exiled from the sukkah, you go into your house. Now, at what point exactly do you have to go back outside? Now, again, you're falling asleep in your house. So, the yered in matrichanos olalos ad sheyeor. So the Braisa says, you're good, you can stay inside your house, you can finish sleeping in your house, up until what point? Ad sheyeor. Now the way we have it in the Braisa, it's spelled yud aleph vav resh. So that's or, that's a reference to light. So ibailahu ad sheyeor or ad sheyeor. So the Braisa says, but we do have a question, meaning we are reading the Braisa. Remember, back in the good old days, they weren't reading the brises; they were hearing the brises from one another. And so, what they want to know: what's the correct nusach habraisa? Is the nusach habraisa achiyor with an aleph or achiyor with an ayin? Now, when I say it, obviously, you don't hear a difference. If you're of the type who knows how to make the correct distinction between the ayin and the aleph, so then good. So then you can hear the difference. But even still, they're both guttural, and they're both and the aleph is not even guttural; it's silent. Okay. So anyway, so what's the correct girsa? Now, what's the difference? So as Rashi points out, but the difference is obvious. If it's with an aleph achayor, that means that you're entitled to stay in your comfortable bed in your home until light, meaning until morning, basically. Or achayor means the first time you turn over in bed, meaning and you woke up and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and it stopped raining, so then you got to go back to the sukkah. So what's the correct nusach of the brisa?
Get up in the middle of the night. And
I'm saying if you get up in the middle of the night, and not you know you. I don't know how. Tashma ad sheyeor v'yala amor hashachar. So the Gemara quotes a brisa. Now what we get in this brisa is basically similar, but the formulation of the brisa is what's going to be confusing to the Gemara. Ad sheyeor v'yala amor hashachar. That formulation is a very strange formulation, as Rashi points out. Ad sheyeor means when it gets light. And then what are the next words of the brisa? Yala amor hashachar. Yala Amor HaShachar means when the eastern sky starts to illuminate. So, what is it? The Bryce is confusing. When do you need to return back to your sukkah? When it gets light? When the eastern sky starts to illuminate?
You need both.
Right. That's exactly what bothers the Gemara. I mean, Tarte? Right. And the Gemara, as Rashi points out, this is Gemara's question. Right. I need both? Meaning, once you say Amud HaShachar, that's a concrete time. Amud HaShachar, approximately 72 minutes prior to sunrise, that's a concrete time. So the Brisa should have just simply said Amud HaShachar. And then Achi Yor, what does that mean? Ela'ema, so the Gemara says, so we're forced to now say, we're not going to tamper with the words of the Brisa. The only thing we're going to do is we're just going to simply make one tweak, and that is the word Achi Yor, is not with an Alf, but rather with an Ayin. And with that one tweak, Achi Yor, when you wake up, via Amud HaShachar, and it's dawn. Meaning that if you wake up at 2 a.m. and you're well before Amud HaShachar, you're fine. You can turn over, you can go back to sleep. But if you wake up and it's Amud HaShachar, now you have to go back to the sukkah. So the truth of the matter is that it's odd. It comes out now that the nusach, the correct nusach is, I know we this bracha we just quoted is Achi Yor, which means until you wake up. But really the true mark of when you need to go back to your sukkah is when it's light outside. Okay. Mashalamah Davidama. What is this comparable to? Where the Gemara now is turning back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that there's a parable in terms of what it's like when it rains on Sukkot. It's not good. Right? We all know that the truth of the matter is that we should be asking for Mayim when Sukkot begins. We delay. We put a delay on the request for rain from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because we don't want it to rain over Sukkot. So what we do is at the end of Sukkot, so we are only on Shemini Atzeres are we mispala for Geshem, because we want to have a rain free Sukkot, and then immediately after Sukkot we want a lot of rain. So Mashalamah Davidame. So raining on Sukkot is a bad simon. And then the Mishnah says, you know what it's like? It's like you're trying to present wine to your master, and the water gets spilled in his face. Ibailuhu mi shafach lemi. Now, in the Mishnah, the way the Mishnah presents the parable, so everything is in pronoun form. Now, the problem with the pronoun is that I don't know who is spilling and whom. Now, Rashi points out over here, in terms of the point the Mishnah is trying to make, we get the point. Yeah. Right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unhappy. It's just, Rashi says, it's just that now when we learn the Mishnah, we just want the correct understanding of the Mishnah. Meaning, what's the proper visual? Is it that when we are presenting it to the master, and the mashal, obviously, Kadosh Baruch Hu is the master. So is it he who's spilling the water back in our face, or is it that when we trip and maybe we spilled water onto the master's face? And as Rashi points out, there's no difference. Rashi says there is no difference. Rashi just simply says it's a correct understanding of the Mishnah. That's all that we're really interested over here. And then Rashi says that is it the what's the shvicha sakita? Meaning in the nimshal, meaning obviously the parable is trying to make a point. In the nimshal, is it the sitting in the sukkah which is considered the spilling, or is it the yirida sagashamim which is considered the spilling? Okay, Tashma, the Gemara says, look, from the Mishnah, it's not absolutely clear, but we have a brisa, and the brisa makes it absolutely clear. D'tanya shafach lo rabo kito nal panav. So the Mishnah, the brisa doesn't use pronouns. The brisa says you're trying to dilute the wine for the master, and what the master does is he pours water in your face. Va'amar lo efshi b'shi mushech, and the master says to the attendant, "Please don't serve me. Stop serving me. I saw a Vilna Gaon." The Rabbi Kornfeld quoted the Vilna Gaon, and the Vilna Gaon says beautifully, we're talking about dilution of wine. The obviously it's two components. There's water and it's wine. So, generally speaking, what was their ratio? It was one part wine to three parts water. Okay, their wine was concentrated. And I don't know what's happened in the past couple thousand years where we no longer have concentrated wine. I don't know much about the wine industry. But anyway, but the wine was concentrated, and so therefore, in order to really enjoy the wine, so you need to dilute it with 3-1, ratio of 3-1. The Vilna Gaon says, in this mashal, right, if you look carefully back at the Mishnah, the Mishnah says, Mashalamah Davidam la'avit sheba limzog kos l'rabo, that really what the attendant wanted to do is he wanted to dilute the wine. So the Gaon says that the wine is din. That's judgment. meaning because Sukkot comes immediately after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and we just experience din, a lot of din. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us on Sukkot is he gives us a lot of mitzvahs to do, and the mitzvah serves as a way of creating rachamim. So the mitzvahs, if you will, is like, the mitzvahs of Sukkot is like mayim, it's like the water. And the water, and the water is coming to dilute the wine. The wine is the din, and the water, is which comes in the form of mitzvahs, it serves as rachamim. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows it to rain on Sukkot, and we no longer can stand the sukkah, so basically what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying is, I don't want the mitzvahs now. Meaning I want there to be more din than the rachamim. He kicks us out of the sukkah, and he removes our opportunity of rachamim. And that's why the Mishnah uses the mashal of meziga, because basically, don't dilute. Right? I want the wine to remain in its concentrated form. I want the din to remain in its concentrated form. That's the Vilna Gaon. Continuing in the Gemara, we are at the first wide line of the Gemara, the beginning of the line, Tana Rabbanan. And from here until the rest of the Perek, basically what we're going to be doing is we're going to try to look at Simanim. Meaning, we just described what the Siman is if it rains on Sukkot. It's not a good Siman. It's a bad Siman. So now what the Gemara is going to do is the Gemara is going to go over other Simanim as well. Now we're going to be talking about, at the simplest level, solar eclipses, lunar eclipses. Now I know they're astronomical events, and I know that they are, the astronomy community knows exactly when the solar eclipses are going to occur and the lunar eclipses are going to occur. So it sounds like, in other words, it's a little strange to understand these Gemaras coming up, because the Gemara basically is going to say, you see a solar eclipse, that's a bad omen. When meanwhile, we could pinpoint pretty clearly when exactly all these events are going to occur. So it is a little bit difficult to understand. Maybe the Gemara over here is not referencing eclipses. Maybe. But again, I'll just simply present the Gemara Kipshuto, the simple Pshat in the Gemara, and I'll leave a better understanding to be provided by somebody else. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Bezman Shacham Aloka Simen Ra L'Cholam Kulam. If there's a solar eclipse, so it is a bad omen for the entire world. Mashlama davadam lamach basavadam shasasud lavadavi inech panas lifnayim. So the Gemara gives a simple parable where the king makes a feast and he invites everybody, and so that everybody could see. So he lays out a lantern. In fact, if you look at Rashi says the word panas in Old French is actually a lantern. Rashi uses a word. Kasaleim ba'amar la'avdo tol panas mipneim v'oshivim b'choshech. And for whatever reason, he gets angry with them, so he removes the lantern and says, let them sit in the dark. And the Gemara says, that's a solar eclipse. So it's a bad omen for the entire world. Tanya. Rabbi Meir Omer calls man shema oros loka simon ra l'sonim sheyisrael. When the luminaries are being literally afflicted, right, lokin. So it is a bad sign for sonim sheyisrael. So if you come to the daf often enough, you know, sonim sheyisrael is a euphemism, it means the Jewish people. Right, the Gemara just doesn't want to say that, but it's a bad sign for the Jewish people if the luminaries are afflicted. Because who usually is on the receiving end of a good beating? So the Gemara says, unfortunately, the Jewish people are. The Gemara gives a very simple analogy where you have the school teacher coming into school and he's got the whip in his hands, and right, we remember the good old days. They weren't always that good, but I. Getting a lot of head nods over here. Yes, we do. Okay. You'll be happy to know it doesn't happen anymore. Okay. Okay. But of course, it comes with its own set of problems, but fine. So the Urtsu Biyada. So me doeg, Misha Rago Lilkos, Bechol Yom Vayom. Hu doeg. So in other words, so the kid who usually is the receiving end of the beating, so when he sees the teacher coming in with the whip, so he's the one who gets the most nervous, and so the nimshal is pretty obvious. In fact, I'm not really sure what we've gained from the mashal over here. I'm sure there is depth to the point of the mashal, but kipshuto, basically when there's a bad sign happening in the world, so the Jews need to worry the most. Tana Rabbanan bezman she'acham aloka siman ra la'avdei kochavim. If the sun is, I'll say it simply, even though it could very well be wrong. But if there's an eclipse of the sun, so that is a bad sign for the Ovdei Kochavim, for the nations of the world. Levana Loki, if there's a lunar eclipse, Simen Ra L'Sonim Sheyisrael. So that is a bad sign for the Jewish people. Mnei Sheyisrael Monim L'Levana V'Ovdei Kochavim L'Chama. And the explanation is very simple. Because we base our year on the lunar calendar. The Ovdei Kochavim based a year on the solar calendar. So obviously, whichever one gets eclipsed will be an omen for that, for the people who use it. Now, if you see the eclipse occur in the east, so it's a bad sign for those living out in the east. And if you see it out in the west, it's a bad sign for those living out in the west. And if it's in the middle, so that's a bad sign for everyone. Yeah, I also heard that the world is round, and I know it is relative to where you're living and where the center is and where the east is and where the west is. I'm aware. But again, we're talking simanim over here, so I can leave the Gemara just on the simplest level, and no, I don't have a full understanding of the Gemara. Pan of domim ladam cherev bala olam. If the face of the sun has a red complexion, so then that's cherev. That's a sign of sword, fighting, murder, death. Lesak, if the complexion of the sun is looking like sackcloth, sackcloth was black in complexion. So that brings about famine in the world. The color of famine is black, right? The blackened faces, and so that's the, it's a simon for black for famine. If the hue of the sun is both reddish and black, so then that means that we can anticipate both cherev and rav. If the eclipse occurs early in the morning, so then it means that we have time. If it occurs as it's setting, so that means that there is no time, and that it's going to be happening imminently. And some have it just the opposite. Okay. And not only the nations get afflicted, but also the Eloh, the literally the gods of the nations, the Malachim, right? We know, we've seen Gemaras speak about this, and you look at the your basic Sifrei Machshava, Derech Hashem, he speaks about this at length. But anyway, but with every nation, there's also a corresponding Malach, a ministering angel that's in charge of that nation as well. So, when not only does a nation get afflicted, but also the ministering angels of those nations get afflicted as well. And for that, the Gemara just simply has the Beferish Pasuk. Shenemar v'chol Elohei Mitzrayim Eseh Shvatim. Go to Parshas Bo, and you'll see that not only was Egypt afflicted, but Elohei Mitzrayim also as well was afflicted. Now, these are simanim, meaning understand the difference between causation and correlation. This is not, does not mean that when you have an eclipse, it's going to actually be a something bad will happen. It's simply a simon. It's a correlation. But if we're doing Ritzono Shel Malkum, but if the Jewish people in mass are doing God's will, so then there's no need for us to fear. Shenemar, Kamar Hashem, El Derech Hagoyim Al Talamdu Meosos Hashemayim Al Techasu Ki Echasu Hagoyim Mehema. And the Gemara makes a diuk, which the truth of the matter is, the diuk is, it's almost self-evident in the Pasuk, but Ovei Kocham Yechatu Vein Yisrael Yechatu. Goyim need to be worried when they see an omen, meaning regardless of their behavior, the omen is an omen, and it does forecast. But for us, it's basically the simon is like a bad weatherman. Right? He may be right, may not be right. Okay. And if we're doing with Sonos Shel Malkum, we really don't need to worry. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. The sun gets eclipsed on account of four things. Meaning the Gemara pinpoints four specific activities where if these kinds of crimes are committed, so then you will see an eclipse of the sun. So let's say you have a Jewish leader, not based in, who dies and doesn't receive a proper eulogy. If you have a betrothed woman, a maiden who was raped and no one was there to save her, and it was in the city and there were people that were there who could have saved her, but no one seemed to care. V'al mishkav zachar, and on homosexuality. V'al shnei achin shenishpach damam keechad, and two brothers whose blood was spilled simultaneously. Okay, what the connection is between these four, and what the connection between these particular crimes and chama. So I didn't do my due diligence. I'm probably, my first recommendation is to look at the Marsha, and the Marsha, I'm sure, will give an explanation in terms of why specifically these four. And for four things, the luminaries get eclipsed, right? The moon. So, Akosve Plaster, forged documents, right? Anytime that we engage in forged documents, obviously we're involved in Sheker, and also we're probably involved in Gezel. Meaning if you're forging a document, you're forging a document in order to extract money from somebody else, so that's basically a form of stealing. Ameide edu Sheker, giving false testimony in court, also probably, aside from the fact that giving false testimony in of itself is an isser, but probably also extracting money from somebody else with the false testimony, or obviously, if not that, then libeling against somebody, and, you know, whatever, it could be a disaster. Megadle behemah dachah b'Eretz Yisrael, raising small animals in Eretz Yisrael. You hear that often throughout Shas. Raising small animals in Eretz Yisrael is a serious crime. Why is it such a serious crime? So Rashi over here writes, because they are uncontrollable, they are unruly, and you cannot keep them in your confined area. They're going to go graze in other people's areas, and basically it's destructive to Eretz Yisrael, and it's theft. And finally, akotasei ilanos tovos, and you're cutting down good trees. Okay, good trees, probably a reference to fruit trees. And Rashi says it's more than just cutting down fruit trees, right? Nirin, I'm reading Rashi, Nirin kiboatim b'kash baruch hu v'vir chaso shemashpia tovo. You're kafui tov. You're showing a tremendous amount of disdain. Akash baruch hu gives you these trees, and you cut them down. It's a terrible mida to demonstrate. Okay, dal dvarim. We are on the last couple lines of Chavtes Amar Aleph. Dal dvarim nichse bale batim nimsarim lamalchus. For four particular crimes, so the possessions of a person is handed over to the government. Amashe shtaris puruim. Number one, you have loan documents. They were paid, but you retain the loan documents. Right back then, the loan transaction was established through a loan document. Meaning, the lender was holding on to the loan document, and the borrower, when he paid, so he would take back the loan document, and then his first move would be to tear it up and to destroy it. If, however, the lender held on to his loan document, which he shouldn't have done, but the Gemara says for that crime, so that is the mida keneged mida, is that your possessions will be taken away by the government. Two, malve berivis, lending it with interest to another Jew. So again, aside from being an isser in the Torah, but on top of that also, you're stealing from a fellow Jew, and so your possessions will be taken away. No. These are just general simanim. General simanim. Al shay yasafek biyadam limchos v'lo michu. And you had an opportunity. We're on the top of Chavtes Amud Beis. And number three, you had an opportunity to reprimand, meaning you could have. You had their attention, and you don't do so. So you were too afraid to do so. So the Gemara says that's also no good. That's also you also are going to have to answer for that. And then you make public pledges and you don't keep your public pledges. Now the reason why you made public pledges is for the purposes of self-aggrandizement. Meaning you are interested in telling people that, hey, look, I'm going to give tzedakah. And then you don't give it. So the Gemara says, right, that's worse, obviously, than making a private pledge and not keeping your private pledge. Okay, but there, all right, whatever, for whatever reasons you couldn't keep it. But here, though, right, it's the arrogance of making it publicly. Amrav Bishwal Arba Dvarim Nichse Bale Batim Yotzim Litimanyon. So the Gemara now goes through one more list of four. And that is a list of four things where your Nechasim aren't handed over to the government. They just kind of disappear. Okay? Now, no good explanation where they went, but they're not here anymore. But on account of what? What is that a result from? Bishwal Arba Dvarim Nichse Bale Batim Yotzim Litimanyon. You don't pay your workers on time. Al oshke schar schir, you don't pay your workers at all. Al shaporkin ol me al savareim v'nosin al chavareim. You take a responsibility, you shirk the responsibility. You take a responsibility, you just basically put it on somebody else's shoulders. And al gasus haruach and a demonstration of arrogance. The gasus haruach keneged kulam, and you saw this coming. And the Gemara says, of these that we just mentioned, arrogance is the worst. Aval ba'anavim ksiv, but when it comes to humility, the Gemara says, anavim yushu aretz, vis angu al rov shalom. But when it comes to modesty, so the Gemara says that the modest yushu aretz will inherit the earth, vis angu al rov shalom, and enjoy abundance of peace. Hajjal al-Chayash, and that is the end of the second parak of Masechta Sukkah. Okay. Let's continue. We are now at the on the border between Prakims number 2 and 3, and we're going to now change gears entirely. Okay, I see some people came prepared. Okay, we're going to be moving to a new volume of the Art Scroll. Okay, that'll be one change, and the other change is the topic of discussion. There are two primary mitzvahs on Sukkah. So the one mitzvah of Sukkah is Sukkah, Yeshiva B'Sukkah. So that has been the preoccupation of our discussion now since the beginning of the Masechta. We started the Masechta on Daf Beis, and Prakims 1 and 2, from Daf Beis to Daf Chavtes, has been the discussion of Sukkah. The first perek primarily dealt with the dimensions of the Sukkah and the construction of the Sukkah, and the second perek mostly discussed the functionality of the Sukkah, how to eat, drink, and sleep in the Sukkah, when you're exempt from the Sukkah. Okay, and there was a little bit of crossover. There was some discussion of construction even in the second parak. Now we move to the third parak. The third parak and the fourth parak, now we're going to be talking about the other mitzvah in Sukkah, and that's the mitzvah of the Dalet Minim. In Sukkah, there's a mitzvah to take four species and to do what with them? So we'll discuss. So we're going to be discussing over the course of these next couple of days. The mitzvah itself is just simply ulkachtem, meaning just to take them. There's na'anuin, there's some shaking involved. We'll talk about that over the course. What exactly is na'anuin? Is that an integral part of the mitzvah? Is that just simply an attachment to the mitzvah? That's something that we're going to be discussing later on as well. And when do we take the dal minim? So it's not clear from the pasuk. Okay, I'm not reading the pasuk inside, so I apologize for mistakes. You're going to take on the first day, say, right from the beginning of the pasuk. It sounds like, when is there a mitzvah to take the dal minim? First day. And then the pasuk goes on. Usmachtem lifnei Hashem elokechem. Oh yeah. Okay, good. Usmachtem lifnei Hashem elokechem shivas yamim. And then you're going to rejoice in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu for 7 days. So quite frankly, the pasuk is confusing. Meaning the beginning of the pasuk talks about how we're supposed to take the dal minim on day one. And then the end of the pasuk talks about how we're supposed to take the dal minim all 7 days. Who's right?
Maybe it's a separate mitzvah.
Oh, so basically, I mean, we're gonna discuss this at length. But there basically are two separate mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah for the rest of us, meaning living outside the Beis Hamikdash, in the area of the Beis Hamikdash, where we're required to take the lulav, hadas, maravas, and we're supposed to take it the first day. Meaning we have a mitzvah d'oraisa to take it on day one. That's the beginning of the pasuk. L'kachtem lechem l'yom harishon. And then, usmachtem lefnei Hashem l'kechem shivas yomim. And then, when the pasuk says that you rejoiced with them in front of Hashem for 7 days, that's talking about in the area of the Beis HaMikdash. In the area of the Beis HaMikdash, so then one is required to take the Dalet Minim all 7 days. So in other words, there's a geographic difference between being in the area of the Beis HaMikdash, Lifnei Hashem, versus anywhere outside. Anywhere outside, there's a mitzvah l'kachtam l'chem b'yam rishon. In the area of the Beis HaMikdash, Shivas Yamim. That's the basic distinction between the first part of the pasuk and the second half of the pasuk. And finally, just words of introduction. And finally, what are the Dalet Minim? So if all we had was the Torah Shebichsav, we would be lost. Right? L'kachtem lechem b'yom harishon, pre-eitz hadar, take a beautiful fruit. Okay. Kapos tamarim. Now we know tamar is the date, but what part of the date? The fruit, right? The trunk. In other words, arve nachal, anaf eitz avos. Anaf eitz avos just simply means a braided twig. In other words, if all we had was just the Torah Shebichsav, we would be lost. So how do we know that what the Dalet Minim actually are? Okay, so all this becomes part and parcel of the discussion of the third parak of Sukkah, and by extension the fourth parak of Sukkah, and that is what we're going to be discussing from this point forward. We're going to go through the Mishnah, and we're going to go just through a little bit of Gemara, and then we will be done for this morning. So here, what the Mishnah is going to do is the Mishnah is going to basically go through criteria of the Dalet Minim. Now there are four species now, as you're going to see, every one of the Minim gets its own Mishnah. And later in the Perek we're going to learn why, because each one of the Minim has its own separate Halacha. meaning there is a halacha unique to every one of the dalminim, and that's why each one of the dalminim gets its own mishnah. We start with the lulav. The lulav is the heart of the dalminim. Okay, right. Obviously, the esrog has more halachos, but in terms of the centrality of the dalminim, it all revolves around the lulav. I have two very simple pieces of evidence that indicate that. Number one, the bracha. Okay, well, the bracha that we make is al netilas lulav, and number two is that where it's held. It's held in the right hand, and it's held in the center of the right hand. So it's really we're going to learn later on, you need all four. Meaning this is a kind of mitzvah where three out of four is not good. Two out of four is not good. But you need all four. If you don't have all four, so then you don't have the mitzvah. So it's not that, in other words, you can label, you know, the lulav as essential, but it doesn't mean that the hadassim and the aravos are less important. They're just as important. Okay, we'll talk about that later as well. Lulav agazavah yavish pasul. If you have a stolen lulav or a dry lulav, it will be disqualified. No good. Shel asher v'shel ir nidachis pasul. If you pick up your lulav from the asherah is a tree that was set aside as a vodah zarah. So the Gemara is going to explain why it is, but that cannot be used as your lulav. And ir nidachis, if it's a subversive city, the subversive city is a city which the majority of the people in that city are being over to vodah zarah. And so they have the labeling now, the status that they're branded as an Ir HaNidachas. Wayward city. Okay. What do we do with this wayward city? So first of all, anyone who was actually engaged in Avodah Zarah, so they're punished. It's a capital crime. Capital offense, the capital punishment. Again, everyone understands the due process, witnesses, warning, etc., etc. And then in terms of the possessions of the city of the Ir HaNidachas, so it's all amassed into the center of the city, and burnt. And so therefore, if for whatever reason you got your hands on the lula from an Ir HaNidachas, so it can't use it. No good. Niktam, and again, please stay tuned, the Gemara is going to discuss why that should be. Niktam rosho, nifritzu alav, pasul. If the head of the lulav is chopped off, or if the leaves are spread out, so then that would be pasul. Nifridu alav kasher. But if they're just spreading out a little bit, so then it would be kosher. Okay, so the Mishnah makes a clear distinction between the leaves being nifritzu, meaning totally spread out, and versus nifridu, meaning just a little bit spread out. Obviously, we have to do a better job in terms of clarifying and quantifying what that means. A lot versus a little. Stay tuned, probably tomorrow I'll come back to that point. I'll discuss that point in more detail. Rav Yehuda Amar Yagdenim Alamala. Rav Yehuda says, well, if they're spreading out a little bit, so what you should do is you should tie it up so that it bundles back together again. Tzini Harbazo Ksheros. If I have lulav specific from the Tzini Harbazo, the Kasher, the Gemara is going to explain. Rashi over here points out that the Tzini Harbazo means that the leaves of the lulav are super short, where basically the leaves of the lulav only go to the base of the next leaf above it. Now, if you're familiar with the lulav, which I assume we all are in this room, if you're familiar with the lulav, you know that the leaves are extraordinarily long. In fact, the leaves are so long that they're basically, they overlap one over the other, and there's only a little distance between the top of one leaf and the top of the other leaf. The Tzini Harbarzel, the top of one leaf actually hits just the bottom of the leaf just above it. But the Mishnah says that's fine. Lulav sheish bo shlosha tfachim kedila naneh bo kasher. How long does your lulav have to be? So the Mishnah says it has to be three tfachim. But as we'll learn in the Gemara together, that's not accurate, meaning that's not really the right shear. The right shear is going to be four tfachim. How do we get from four tfachim from our Gemara, from our Mishnah? So please stay tuned. We're going to be discussing. Okay. Let's just discuss two basic points, and then we will end off for today, and we'll continue tomorrow. The Mishnah says that the lulav ha-gazel is going to be disqualified. Okay, a stolen lulav is no good. So why not? So, right. So we're gonna talk about this at length tomorrow. It's got to be yours. And if it's gazel, it's not yours. And furthermore, they could also make another point as well, which is mitzvah ba be'avera, meaning you stole something and you're using a mitzvah from that which you stolen, mitzvah ba be'avera, and that's tomorrow's daf. So we're gonna spend much more time with that tomorrow. Today, however, I just like to spend some time on the yavesh. Right? If it's a dry lulav, so then it's no good. What's wrong with a dry lulav? So first take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, what's wrong with the dry lulav? So Rashi says the problem with the dry lulav is, I need a mitzvah mehuderes that has to be a beautiful mitzvah. The Torah says, that this is my God and I will glorify him. Right? So Pasuk Anaz Yashir. So from there we learn that you have to make your mitzvahs beautiful. And so therefore, if it's dry, it's not beautiful, and therefore it's going to be disqualified. If you take a look at the top Tosfos over here, so the top Tosfos says, no, that's not correct. Rashi's not right. Now, what Rashi's not right about is not that we don't have to beautify our mitzvahs. First, we have to beautify our mitzvahs. But to say that if we are faulty, if we're delinquent in our beautification of the mitzvah, so then it's going to be disqualified, meaning that's a strong statement out of Rashi, and Tosfos says, no. So Tosfos gives a very simple explanation. Why can the lulav not be dry? So Tosfos says because there's a hekesh, meaning all dalaminim are put together in one pasuk, and so therefore we assume that preates hadar, the esrog, not because of zekeh levan veil, but by simply because the Torah describes it as being a beautiful fruit, preates hadar. And so therefore, if the esrog has to be beautiful, so too do the other three minim as well. The other three species need to be beautiful as well. I'm just reading Tosfos. So Tosfos says, look, I'll prove to you very simply. That zekeh levan veil is not going to disqualify your mitzvah. It makes the mitzvah nicer. Makes the mitzvah more beautiful. You remember we had a discussion earlier. You need to wrap up your minim, your dal minim? So that was a machlokas. Rav Yehuda says you do need to wrap it up, and the chachamim say you don't. Now, even according to the chachamim, we say you don't need to wrap it up, but you should, because of zekeh levan veil. But the Gemara said earlier, right, Tosfos reminds us of the Gemara back on Daf Yud Aleph, that if you don't wrap it up according to the Chachamim, it's not disqualified. Zekeh levan veil is not going to be disqualification of the mitzvah. So hard to imagine that Rashi's right over here, that zekeh levan veil is going to disqualify your lula because it's dry. Okay. There is one more explanation in terms of why a dry lulav is no good. So Rashi says because it's a function of zekeh levan veil. Tosfos says it's a function of the fact that in the same pasuk I have preates hadar with the other minim. So just like the esrog has to be hadar, so to the others. And then there's a ravid. The ravid is popular and famous, and you know why, because I know it. But the probably can imagine. We saw this parak once or twice before. But the ravid says it's a function of a pasuk and halal. The pasuk and halal says la amesim yaluka, that dead people can't praise the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And yavish, when you have the dry lulav, it's kemes. It's like keilu. It's like somebody who's dead. And v'lo hamesim yahaluka, and the mace can't praise the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So the Ravid says that the reason why the lulav cannot be dry, it's because then it's domal mace. It's similar to someone who's dead, and therefore does not have the ability to give shevach to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. The other big issue when it comes to Yavesh is, what exactly is Yavesh? Meaning, what is dry? So if you take a look back at the same Tosfos, I'm only really dealing with one issue today. Tomorrow I'll deal with other issues. So if you take a look back at the same Tosfos, Yavish Yavshu Rova Love and Ishtar Sham Shoshabade, Alan Lachin Ksharan Amma Any Yavisha Tolabish Shnemasar Chodesh. So, first of all, Tosfos says, I'm rejecting 12 months. In other areas of halacha, Yavish is 12 months. In this context, I'm rejecting that. Tosfos says, no, it's not 12 months. But, Yeshama Yavisha Zacha Kamo Yavisha Ozen Bechor, Denan Beperg Elu Mumin, Rabbi Yossi Ben Hamishulam Omer Yavsha Achitehe Nefrechas Bichti Parin. It cracks under the fingernail, meaning in Kol B'choros, we talk about what is the physical blemish of an animal, specifically the ear of the animal. It's starting to dry and get crusty. Where if I rub my fingernail against it, it starts to crack. It has no flexibility. So Tosha says that's his understanding of our shear over here. It has no flexibility. The the Shulchan Aruch, if you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, he gives another definition of Yavesh. Yavesh means it's white. Meaning the lulav has lost its green, and it's white. Obviously it turns white much quicker than when it becomes so dry that it'll crack and it loses its flexibility. Okay, we'll stop over here. Obviously, much more to speak about. I just wanted to get us into the third perek. Tomorrow we'll start with the Gemara.